Writing people, KJ here. This episode of Hashtag MWriting is about setting yourself up for NaNoWriMo success, no matter what spin you're personally putting on it. We love NaNoWriMo because it takes a month when it's easy to slack off, hello holiday season, and turns it into a month when much of the writing community is settling in to push harder, whether it's for the classic draft your novel NaNo, or whether you're creating a book proposal, editing an existing work, drafting a memoir, or applying yourself fresh to anything else. You can create NaNo whatever you want. But if you're going for the classic write a draft of your novel in a month NaNoWriMo, you're going to want to sign up for Author Accelerator's free 7-day Jumpstart Your Book email series. Truly, the 7 exercises they send you, from a one-sentence logline to your back-of-the-book copy, and the advice on getting those done, can really help set you up for success. I go back to those exercises again and again to see what I've promised the reader in my novel and what I've promised myself. Sign up at www.authoraccelerator.com/amwriting.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause, and
I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Dell'Antonio, and this is Hashtag MWriting. Hashtag MWriting is our podcast. It is your podcast about writing all the things. Fiction, nonfiction, proposals, emails, pitches, and in short, this is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I am one of your co-hosts. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and a new book coming out in 2021 about preventing substance abuse in kids, and just finishing up, packing up, turning it into a package for my deadline. Yay!
And I'm Serena Bowen, the author of 30-odd romance novels, and the latest one is called Moonlighter.
I am, as previously stated, KJ Dell'Antonio, author of How to Be a Happier Parent, as well as a novel coming out in June of next year. Cannot wait to share a cover with everybody, but that is still a little bit away. And I want to remind everyone that if you want to hear a little bit more from us, you can sign up for our weekly emails, in which we will basically shoot you out the podcast along with all of the links and a little bit of a transcript and everything you could possibly need to know about every episode. So you can sign up for that at amwritingpodcast.com.
As where you, the place where you find all the good things.
All the good things.
What are we talking about today?
Oh, we are talking about like the super obvious elephant in the room topic for all writers in October, which is, are you doing NaNoWriMo? And if so, how?
And what? Yeah.
And what? Exactly. So you guys know I love NaNo, but I've only managed to do it like straight up, NaNo straight, once, which was in 2017, and that's actually eventually the draft that turned into the novel that's coming out next year. So every other year, I've sort of taken November and that energy that is just afoot in the writing community and thrown my own style at it. Like I did some variation of NaS something or another for my How to Be a Happier Parent book. And this year I'm drafting. So it's going to be National Novel Writing Month for me, but it's not the whole novel. I mean, I've already written part of it. It would be silly to abandon that. So my topic for today for us is sort of whatever, RYMO. National Whatever Write Month. Because I think it's so cool. November is a month you could easily just toss, right? Because it's November, the holidays are on the way. There's no way you can do a lot of writing this month, right? And once you've tossed November, December just might as well. Yeah, we'll just start again in January. And come on, if you do this right, you know, if you let the community encourage you, by January, you could have a whole book. Forget Or you can have nothing. Those are your choices. Whole book.
Well,
or
this
nothing.
Month,
okay. maybe it's not quite that
stark. NaNoWriMo has always been a really sentimental time for me because this is something I did with my students from very early on when NaNoWriMo first started. And it was a process that I started before the month began. And we would go through this whole process of like, why it's fun to let go of, you know, the what are the parameters for this essay and how does it need to look in all the various drafts and just start to write. And I some of my fondest memories of teaching are there was a morning when one of my students came in. It was like day two of NaNoWriMo. And she came into school and she looked at me and her eyes were just huge. And she said, I felt like I fell into a book, like I was a part of it, and I've never experienced that before. And I think for kids especially, you know, we tend to tell them, you have to write, and here's your rubric, and it has to look like this, and don't forget that the topic statements have to support the thesis statement, blah, blah, blah. And for students to see that first experience of them falling into a book and becoming a part of it as they just sort of let it pour out of them. That's always been what November has been about for me, whether it's experiencing it myself or just sort of checking in every once in a while with the vibe, like through Twitter or, you know, all of those sort of everyone talking about it online. There's just a really cool vibe about November and NaNoWriMo. It's great. I really love it.
Of course, ironically, one of the things we're about to tell listeners is don't just sit down and start writing.
Yeah, and I'm talking about kids. I mean, we went through a whole planning process actually with the kids. NaNoWriMo, and I don't know if they still do it, but there's a junior version of it, and they have a whole workbook that prepares kids for it. Like, you actually plan your characters. There's worksheets. It's really well done. If it still exists, we'll put it in the show notes because it's a really great resource for kids. And of course, kids aren't writing 50,000 words. They're setting their own goal. And when we did it, there was also a community online where you could register your class, and the kids would log their progress every day, and they'd have these little meters, and sometimes they'd get into competitions with each other, and they'd come in and they'd say, I saw that you logged another 3,000 words yesterday. Yay, you. I mean, it was a really great process that NaNoWriMo actually was pretty thoughtful about in terms of preparing kids. So no, it was not just sitting down and writing, even for my students.
I'm pretty sure that's still there. Serena, have you ever used NaNoWriMo to put together a book? I mean, it's right at your speed, right?
Yeah, I have, actually. The first time I completed it was for a novel that is currently in a drawer.
It's a good place for
and,
some novels.
You know, this one really probably deserves to come out, but I've been a little busy. But the weird thing about this is that I wrote this piece of women's fiction, and I was kind of down on women's fiction because my one attempt had failed, but I wrote this NaNo piece and I like it. But there was a couple characters in there, like a father and a daughter who had been estranged for 17 years. And so on like December 4th, I was sitting in my child's violin class, as one does, like not paying attention. And I thought, you know, that dad and that girl, that's a really good story. So that idea sitting there after writing 50,000 words became my book, The Accidentals.
One of my favorite books of yours. I love that book. I love that relationship. I love those characters.
Well, thank you. And so that's both, you know, a fun little story, but also a cautionary tale about maybe I could have gotten to that story first and understood its power if I had been a little more thoughtful about my NaNo project.
Well, that is kind of why we are doing this today, as opposed to on October 31st, which is just to take some time and give a little thought to, you know, what can you do with this community push this month? Can you, you know, if you want to write 1,600 words, how can you make it a good 1,600 words that is a useful 1,600 words? And on the other hand, if you want to, you know, if you want to use just use the energy, then I think what matters is just to try to just push yourself a little more, because that's kind of what NaNo is about. I mean, we have the 1,000 words a day that I'm doing right now. And I know, Serena, you're trying to do 1,200, but I'm just coming back at 1,000 words strong. But 1600 is a lot more. So I feel like whatever project you're working on or whatever thing you're working on, now's a really good time to take a look at it and go, well, how can I just give that just a little bit more? How can I put together like a group of people to encourage me to just really get to something I can call an end in November?
One thing I would love to do today, if it's at all possible, is to talk about, I'm in a weird position where I can't do a ton of advanced planning because I think, you know, this project, finishing up this book and a work trip, work slash vacation trip that I have right after it's due will put me up into the end of the month. So I have a couple of possible things that I would be willing to share on the podcast that I could possibly work on. And I would love to sort of, if we have time today, to sort of brainstorm what might make the most sense.
Ooh, what should Jess do next? This is a great topic. Okay, I love this. All right, well, let's start there and then we'll talk about like trying to set ourselves up right. What do you got?
Me? The Jess stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, I get to go first? Okay. Yeah. All right, so I have three things. I have a YA novel that I started a long time ago, actually, during NaNoWriMo. I have a first chapter that I love and characters that I love and some things I've thought about over time. And Serena's actually even read an early version of this chapter. And I feel like I need to finish that book for myself. I feel like I need to see that through. It's a very sort of personal thing for me, and I have no idea what will become of it, but I think just that will be something I regret if I don't finish. So I have that. And then I also have these essays sitting there that are really important also that I would like to continue working on to some eventual possible essay collection. And then I have an idea for another research-based book and that I'm totally not ready to talk about yet, but that I'm sort of excited about doing the proposal process of, you know, working out my ideas for that proposal.
And what you have also, edits, though, is the possibility of your edits dropping on you at any time and somewhat randomly.
Right. But here's the thing, right? Because we've talked about this a little bit, my original publication date was going to be in next fall. The election is pushing that until the spring of the following year. So my official pub date is now in spring of 2021. And edits, I have plenty of time. I think for my sanity on this project, I would like to get a little bit of mental distance from the book. And November might be a fantastic gap in which to do that. In fact, I heard from my editor that she might not even get to look at the rest of the book until the end of November anyway. So that gives me a really nice buffer to put this book away and do what Stephen King talks about, which is that put it in a drawer until it starts to feel a little bit like an artifact and you can look at it a little more objectively.
Oh, I love that you're going to get that time.
I'm really excited about that too. So I think it might be wise for me to not work on edits for just a little bit, just a short period of time, just enough time to work on something else and focus on just that one thing.
Okay, we like this plan. We like this plan.
Yeah. So thoughts. So we have those three things. Book proposal, essays, novel. The problem with the novel thing is I don't have time to plan, really, before I'd have to start on that.
Hmm. Well, of course, I want you to write the novel. But partly, it's not just that I really like YA novels and I enjoyed reading the beginning of it, but also because I honestly feel that novels lend themselves more constructively to this kind of attention.
That's true.
I feel that essays may be a little more challenging, although you could use the ability to move from one to another in a helpful way. Like if you get stuck on one essay, I can just picture myself flipping around a lot, though.
Well, and you have heard me say that these essays, these sort of creative nonfiction is where I really get a buzz. So I do really enjoy and do a deep dive in when I'm in. So there's that.
I guess a nice thing about NaNo for what we're talking about is that the idea of the specific idea of NaNoWriMo is you've come out of the month with a 50,000 word novel draft. But it's not a daily goal. Like, I described it as a daily goal. Like, if you're going to get to 50,000 words, you got to write 1,612 words a day. Ask me how I know. But you don't have to. So you're saying, well, I don't have time to plan. And I think my answer to that is, well, first of all, you've got some stuff written. So you've got some things in your head. You know, you could sit down and create an inside outline. You could do some work even in the beginning of November. And maybe what you say is, well, my nano for this book, because I've already got X, is another 30,000 words plus the mm-hmm. outline. Or
I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking in terms of its old name, the name Jenny used to call that outline, and I couldn't remember the new name, so I'm really glad you said it. I was actually thinking that spending deep time on that inside outline might be just the perfect way to start the month and then jump in. I don't know. I wish Jenny was on this.
I thought about that. Oh, well. Guest opportunity missed. Blinking
clearly, clearly, I will do some more thinking about it. I think I know what Jenny's answer would be. Spend very careful time on your inside outline before you willy-nilly go off writing, your novel. Because as you found out, you can spend a lot of time and words and effort writing something that isn't right. And and why do that if you can spend some time really organizing it on the front end first?
Very true. But you do, you also want to take advantage of the mm-hmm. energy of having the project. So I think if you go into it with your defined version of what you want it to look like, and if it is both realistic and yet a push, mm-hmm. that's ideal.
You could also structure this in a way that accommodates your need to spend time doing some side writing for this mm-hmm. book. So you could count those words.
You could
count the words that you spend on your outline. Mm. And when I outline, and I was doing this last night, actually, I had a horrible long day of returning emails and so much conflict and just the worst Monday ever. And then I went to take a kid to a music lesson. I guess that's a theme today. And I was walking around the track at the Lebanon High School in the dark with my phone recording me talking about what had to happen next in this book. And I swear to God, I've written like 7 outlines for this book already, but I really just needed to walk around that track in circles and say, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then that happens. And then, so then I got home and I sort of blurted all of this outline stuff out of the application, which is called otter.ai, into a document, and there were 2,000 words.
Side note, supporters can find otter.ai in an upcoming Top 5 for Writers, Top 5 Resources for Dictating Your Work. Just throwing that out there. Sorry.
Good footnote.
PSA, footnote. PSA over.
Okay, but so what sometimes happens when I get 2,000 words of outline is that when I'm tapping away there, trying to give myself all of the good stuff that I've been thinking about, I accidentally write partial scenes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's totally
or just
possible.
Lines. I totally agree with you, because I'll be like, and he says da-da-da-da, and she says da-da-da-da, and then the da-da-da-das do make it into the book.
Yes. So there's no reason to sort of like hold your outline hostage. You can be outlining and, writing a novel in the same hour.
You're so smart. No, I love this. This is really great, especially since, so one of the byproducts of having kept my butt in the chair and being a good little writer doobie is that I am so remarkably out of shape. And so one of the tasks of, for me in November is taking more walks, doing more hiking and getting out more. And so using something like my phone to dictate some and do what you're talking about actually would be a really good way to keep that going.
I feel like this is practically a Take Back November movement. It's like, y'all are claiming that November is the time when we're supposed to start holiday shopping and marinating things and putting pie dough in pie dough containers. No, it's not. November is actually, especially the first part, a really great time when things tend to like the fall routine tends to be set, whether it's your personal routine or a work routine or a family routine, and it tends to just kind of keep going. There aren't concerts and all of the early fall stuff has fallen away, and so early November can be super productive. And then you take that energy and you just get up early and ignore your whole family and make it keep going through that beginning of the holidays.
I do have to say that there won't be a lot of ignoring my family simply because I have to say I already did that. Yeah. In this last month, my husband has been the grocery getter, the laundry doer, the dog taker carer of her. I mean, they've done everything and I have been so absent. And so one of the things I'm really looking forward to in November is spending more time with my family, getting to know my family again. It'll be lovely. They've grown since I saw them last.
Hopefully not all.
But I think this is really helpful, actually. I think I have sort of a mental game plan, and I think it's the novel, and I think it's doing what Serena's talking about with the outlining and sort of thinking about scenes. I've changed some of the characters. Actually, one of them I changed at Serena's behest. I have a friendship that is now, I think, more of a romance. And that's a great idea. I'm happy with that. That sounds like a great plan for November.
Well, so Serena, I love that you're pulling together pieces for a new novel. That's kind of where I am, but I think you're more strongly there. So let's talk about what we can put together now in October, if we're on top of it, or at the beginning of November, whatever works, to try to help make the words that we're going to write in November actual usable words instead of just the words that you have to sort of vomit past in order to get to the real book.
Okay, well, you know that we love to talk about resources for this. And at the top of our resources list, of course, we're going to put Jenny Nash's outlining as one of our gold standard ways to get into writing a book. So that goes right at the top of the page.
And we also have last week's discussion of character enneagrams. So
that's
if
right.
Anybody missed that, go back, because this is how we're, one of the ways we're thinking about our characters anew and afresh. So that's another good one. I'll put that
right.
on
so,
the list.
So this is an outline right here. And, you know, Roman numeral one is the Jenny Nash method of understanding the point of your book and finding the through line so that the things that happen are connected by cause and effect. And then, so Roman numeral two is different kinds of character, character-based plotting. So Enneagrams is a great resource, so that's letter A. Letter B is perhaps something like the emotional wound thesaurus that we talk about sometimes, understanding what's driving your characters and what stuff in their icky background is scaring them. Which also leads into that book I talked about a couple episodes about, which is now getting some play in our Facebook group, guys. Like a couple people have said they're reading Take Off Your Pants, which is about character-based plot outlining. And then, of course, we have to reserve a Roman numeral at the bottom of this outline for classic plot, hero-based plotting. I've said before that it's slightly frustrating to me that that hero-based plotting is tricky in romance, but we do have a resource to share, you guys. We were sent this deck of cards called the Fabula Deck, and there's, I believe, 28 of them at fabuladeck.com. Oh, it's 40 cards, sorry. And the first ones in the deck are my favorite, so it's the hero's steps. You know, it goes, so card number one literally says the ordinary world. Who is the hero? What is his world like at the beginning? And if you're plotting something like high fantasy or Star Wars or something with a defined hero going on a journey or an adventure, this would be just invaluable.
Right.
And step number two is the call to action. And step number three is anxiety of the call. And so these cards are just like little roadmap. You could
Wait, is it a 40-step roadmap, or is it like the first 10 cards are a roadmap and the next ones are...
Well, there's 14 hero steps, which is okay. A nice structure. Mm-hmm. And then there's character cards and some reader steps. So there's a few different frameworks in the deck.
Wait a minute. I need us to take a step back and just talk about, like, what is this deck? Is this, like, that spinny plot wheel that somebody came up with in, you know, the 1800s? Or, you know, spin the wheel and figure out what your, you know, next step. A stranger arrives. Next step. You know that
well, thing. I think it's more like a Joseph Campbell hero's journey. And if you... Actually, on their website, they use a cute example where they've plotted the Matrix movie against the first few decks cards in the deck. So for the Ordinary World card, the first step of the hero's journey, their sticky note says, "A hacker doubts his reality." And then card number two, which is the call to action, is that he follows the white rabbit. And they kind of demonstrate the way that a lot of classical action stories that we've come to enjoy follow this path right. In the way that they've laid it out.
It's just a fun like structural way, I guess, to have the cards out there. That's kind of a fun twist.
It is a fun twist.
The whole Joseph Campbell thing is something my students used to love to do. It was one of our favorite things, is we'd plot out, you know, like Star Wars, The Matrix, you know, The Lion King, according to like all the different, you know, parts of the, with the Joseph Campbell stuff. It's super fun. I love that stuff.
Well, isn't it funny how movies lend themselves so much better to this? It's because when you really look at a movie, they're so bald, because all of the stuff that takes words in a novel,
yeah,
is on, like, it comes into your brain in a different way in a movie. Like the whole, you know, the description of the person's office and the description of what the person looks like and the description of the person's movement. There's whole enormous, I mean, when you peel all that back, you're left with post-it notes that say things like, "Hacker doubts his reality." It's kind right. of amazing. And that's kind of going back to the inside outline, right? You're trying to get just those post-it notes, and for some reason it's so hard. Like, I feel like I need 20 post-it notes.
One of the things we would also do is the kids would come in and I would ask them to sort of just start shouting out some of their favorite books or series or whatever, and then the challenge would be, can we plot this book, you know, isn't this interesting how we can, and then they would get this look in their eye like all of a sudden order had been established in their universe, and it was really sort of satisfying to be able to say, oh my gosh, look at this thing has a trajectory with these common plot points or with these common milestones, and we can do that with this book and we can do that with this book. It's just this really nice moment when they go, ah, look at the universe makes sense all of a sudden. It was great.
So what else is in the cards? Like, what is in the cards for us?
Well, you're going to have to flip through all of the hero steps, but we get to, you know, a death, which does not need to be literal, and a resurrection. And then the cards also give you a few other ways to look at your story, like how the reader is experiencing it. So... I actually find the first half of the deck to be the most useful with the hero's journey, because if you're going to cut out a card, or if you don't know what goes on that card, then it's a hole that, you know, you need to acknowledge and confront.
Right. Yeah. So if you're getting ready for your nano and you can lay out those cards or some version of those cards, I mean, you can find a lot of different sort of story structure. It's all over the place. It's Save the Cat. It's in that book, The Idea, that I've talked about before. There's lots of places to see the hero's journey stretched out, but it sounds like this is a super fun and practical way to do it. But anyway, yeah, if you don't have that death or that, the hero resists the journey kind of thing, then you're missing something. There's something that people need to see happen that hasn't happened, and you can fulfill these expectations in a bazillion different ways, but if you don't fulfill them, you tend to sort of end up with people going, wait a minute, or maybe just not reading at all.
Well, and this is really timely for me because there's elements from the Aeneid in the YA novel that that I'm talking about. And, you know, the Aeneid is eminently plottable. And so just that it makes sense that you're talking about these cards today because there is this sort of mythic underpinning in the YA novel that I'm now getting very excited to dive back into.
I have a terrible time with it, though, I have to say. With the journey plotting, I do remember like writing down in huge letters because you were talking about the how something needs to die. Like that's kind of there's all kinds of names for that. It's the moment right. of the all is lost moment is my favorite. And I wrote in like capital letters about my new book, you know, that a person metaphorically dies. And I was like, oh yeah, I found it. But I don't know. I guess I just get caught up in all that stuff I was saying you don't even see in a movie. It's really hard to just lay down the post-its and be like, this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, and it's harder than it thinks.
Plenty of people would argue that if you're coming at it from the perspective of, I need to have all these plot points in my book, then you're going about it backwards and you're losing the freshness, or you're losing the lifeblood of your novel. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like Virgil went out and said, okay, got to go get me some Joseph Campbell before I can write the Aeneid. It's just that, you know, various things.
I'm really not Virgil. And
yeah,
I mean, I get you, but I think that what at least tends to happen for me is that I have a giant messy thing in my head with all of those things in it. And what I am doing is more in along we should just call this the podcast in which we reference Stephen King's On Writing constantly. But
well, we do it all the time. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. We'll just change the name of the podcast. The part where you're excavating the dinosaur, right? So right. It's finding, I mean, I'm digging for the post-its. It's not like I'm artificially creating the post-its. It's that they're buried in a pile of other paper and magazine clippings and pictures of people and cards
right.
and goodness knows what. So, yeah, I have a hard time digging out the important post-it, I think, is what I'm saying. So even going back and revising my book that's coming out next year, there were definitely moments of, like, I know this thing is in here, like this turning point, but I really need to peel away the 16 descriptions of what the character is doing and whose hand she's holding or whatever in that minute so that people can see that. So, you know, do it ahead of time. And I guess we're hoping we'll be ahead of the game, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I will acknowledge that some of my best books have the best dark moments for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I sort of fight it the way that you're describing, you know, it's totally worthwhile to continue prodding yourself mercilessly until you find that
really dark moment. Yeah.
Right. And I will say that, you know how I like to fill up the extra spots in my sticker calendar with quotes? I had one in September, that I wrote down because I think it's true. With a but at the end. So it's an E.L. Doctorow quote like this. Writing a novel is like driving a car at night. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way. And
But
I acknowledge that the wisdom here, and he's right, but I have written a lot of novels just looking at the headlights, and I'm squinty and tired. And I have really given myself the task of making 2020 the year of the outline, because when I have recently had better outlines, I just feel better about my life.
Well, and we'll just, you know, kind of to stretch poor E.L. Doctorow's metaphor out, you do need to know where you're going. I mean, yeah, it's like driving at night, but it's best to drive at night with the idea that you're going to get to Concord, as opposed to the thought that you're just going to go out and drive at night. So, you know, we're just trying to find a few points on the map here, because goodness knows that I am perpetually lost.
The last time we drove at night, we almost killed a bunny.
That's right! Yeah, so you want to be careful with that stuff. It's dangerous.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, well, I think this is our way of saying let's all figure out what our own now whatever RIMO is. What's yours going to be, Serena? What's the goal for November? I know you've got one.
Yeah, so my issue with actually ever doing NaNoWriMo is that I can't give wholly 1 month to one project reliably.
Right.
So I'll be putting the finishing touches on one thing and then getting back to some other things. So it's going to be a mixed bag. But I'm going to finish up a novel called Heartland in my True North series. And that is my big goal for the next 5 weeks for sure.
Yeah, that's mine basically too, except I think I should probably not call my novel Heartland because that'd just be weird. So I'm trying to finish up the novel that I am working on, which has lots and lots and lots of bits written, but definitely needs a full, yeah. If I can get it done by the end of November, I'm going to get it done by the end of November. It's exactly the kind of goal I'm talking about. It's a push. It's a stretch. But I can do it. So that's going to be fun. And I probably do need 50,000 words, although we all know that my problem is more words. Too many words, not too few words. In fact, today's goal was write the 1,000 words and then delete enough words to get the chapter I was working on back below 3,000 words, because that's my new rule. No chapters over 3,000 words. So it was like, yes to 1,000 words. Whoop, no, we're just going to delete. But it all counted. It all counted. Anyway. And
cool.
We've given Jess her task.
Yeah, well, and it's going to be really weird jumping back into that, because for a while there I was on that, I'm going to let myself pull a Diana Gabaldon, which is apparently she does not always write in a linear fashion. She'll just write whatever strikes her when she picks up in the morning, and then she'll have these random scenes that she then has to string together. So I did that for a while, so I don't even know what's in that file now. I know.
That's going to be great.
You're it's going to be so weird.
No, it's going to be
awesome.
It's
going to be crazy.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, anybody read anything worthy of note?
I have.
Okay, you have too. All right. Go ahead.
Well, my thing, though, is I'm going to do something really obnoxious, and I'm going to apologize ahead of time, but I have these advanced copies of books that have been sitting on the side of my desk, and I've been begging for extra time on them, but I've been asked to read them for various reasons, and so I'm taking them with me on vacation next week, and I started two of them, and I'm not only do I have, spoiler here, I have KJ's book and Serena's next book on my iPad. I get to read those. And I am so excited. I was saying, I feel like such a wealthy person going off with these two books on my iPad.
Nobody
so
is going to believe anything you say about either of these books.
It's like having
our mother say they're wonderful.
Absolutely not. But I also have three advanced copies by three authors I really like. And one of them is Peggy Orenstein. She wrote this fantastic book called Girls and Sex. And her new book, Boys and Sex, is coming out in January. And I have been skimming through it, and I already love it. I already love it. I have an advanced copy of Madeline Levine's new book. Madeline Levine wrote Price of Privilege and Teach Your Children Well. And her new book is called Ready or Not. And I'm really excited to read that. And then I have another book by Christine Carter, who wrote a book called The Sweet Spot. And I know her because we did a talk one time together in California about middle school. And her new book is called The New Adolescence: Raising Happy and Successful Teens in an Age of Anxiety and Distraction. And so I have five books to take on vacation with me that I'm excited to read. So this is going to be a big reading week for me. I'm so, so excited. And two of these, like I said, I've already started to dive into and I already like. But I have not touched your book or Serena's book. I'm keeping those for vacation.
Okay.
So exciting.
Well, I read one book. I don't have a staggering one, but I really liked it. I finished The Lager Queen of Minnesota. Serena, I bought this at Print in Portland. when we were in Portland. Remember, I was sort of wandering around with this stack of books, and I was like, yeah, I don't want any of these. And then all of a sudden, I was like, but I'm going to go back for that one. I've been eyeing that one. It's the author's J. Ryan Stradal, S-T-R-A-D-A-L. And I loved this book. It's really good. It's got a lot of different points of view. And, oh, when we were talking about the Enneagram, and I was like, oh, there's this character in it that's a total, I think it was six, but I don't remember. Anyway, lots of different points of view, a really good story, people that you really want to hear more from. Some of them you don't get to hear more from because it's got all these points of view. But it comes full circle in this really cool, unexpected yet satisfying way, and we all know that's exactly what you want. So this is definitely a recommend for me. It's also a lovely cross between literary and commercial. It sits right on that line that I like, which is smart but commercial. I don't know where people have mentally filed it, but I enjoyed it. I also wanted to throw out there that I bought a book by Jojo Moyes, who's great. Like, you know, Me Before You and all that, right? So I bought a book that I was eyeing it. I was like, this looks different and it feels different. And I bet this is one of her early books. And it was. It's, the Peacock Emporium or something like that. And when I finally managed to look at the pub date, because I just didn't when I bought it, it's 2004. And it's kind of funny, just out of a sheer, I don't think I'm going to be able to finish it because it's doing a lot of, there's a really long wind up before the pitch is all I'm saying. I'm like a quarter of the way through the book and I don't think these are even the main characters yet. But you can kind of see where she's going, and it's fun to read an earlier book by somebody who has gotten so good at it.
Cool. This was a conversation I had with my kids last night. My son was listening to some music and he said, oh my gosh, I've been listening to the same musician for the longest time and I can just see the trajectory. And I said, that's what's really fun for me about when I find an author I like and then going back and reading some of their early works or following someone like David Sedaris and seeing, you know, the bridge between some of his early stuff and then what we both agreed was his best book, which is Calypso, his most recent one. I love seeing that progress. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun and it's just encouraging because I definitely feel like I'm growing from book to book, and I know you guys do too. So it's nice to see it. It's nice to see it out in the wild.
Since you mentioned it, I want to make sure we give a proper shout out to Print. If those of you who have been listening for a long time might remember, we were there once. We recorded our interview with Richard Russo at Print. It was not the quietest background ever, but it is a fantastic bookstore. And the reason we were there the reason we were there is that Richard Russo's daughter is the owner of Print Bookstore, and it is a beautiful, wonderful bookstore that I adore.
Yes, in Portland. Yeah. So let's call that the fave indie bookstore of the week.
Yeah.
Done.
Print.
Done. Love it. I even have a little bookmark from there in my copy of The Lager Queen of Minnesota. Love them. All right.
Great.
That's our week.
We're good. We have a game plan, people.
We have a game plan
for November.
For November. Said it at the beginning of the episode, saying it again now, head over to amwritingpodcast.com, sign up to get our emails. We also do supporter emails every week, top five for writers. There's one, I think it actually already rolled out, that's top five reasons to do your own NaNoWriMo, which has got some of what we talked in this episode and a bunch of other stuff because I just wrote it. So head over, sign up for that. You'll get emails whenever we drop an episode. You have the option of getting the top fives, which are fantastic. Some great stuff coming up. And that is it. And of course, as always, if you're having fun with us, review us. Help other people to find us. We love that.
Please
do. We want to talk to as many of our fellow writers as we possibly can.
And until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. This episode of Hashtag MWriting with Jess and KJ was produced by Andrew Perella. Our music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and performed by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their services because everyone, even creatives, should be paid for their work.